I'm sorry my opponent didn't think enough of you to show up for this debate. I'm sure he had more important things to do.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. Today we are talking fantasy face-off with Stevie Fizz and the Statesman. But before we get into the show, Steve put up a Twitter poll recently where we had, what would you prefer on your nachos? Mince with taco seasoning or guacamole? And thank you to everyone who voted for the mince, who came out winners 52% to 48%. But Steve, underhand tactics here, mate. You're calling on the vegan community to get the votes up. It just didn't even work. What happened?
Yeah, I did. I tried. I tried what tactics that you would have used.
Very much so.
So I followed a bunch of Twitter, Vegan Australia, Vegetarian Australia, trying to get them to retweet the poll. They didn't.
Wow.
And unfortunately now, because I've got to go unfollow these people, because now I'm getting all these vegetarian recipes popping up in our bloody Twitter feed.
Maybe the States wouldn't like that.
We did actually get some few followers out of it. So
excellent.
That was handy. But, Jono, you blindsided me, because we had this argument like 3 weeks ago, and it wasn't even about which is better.
I don't remember.
Anyway.
I plead the fifth.
That's okay, people. I understand you got to... You got to eat that dead animal carcass.
That's right. But how was one of our listeners had his Christmas Mexican hamper filled with Mexican food goodness?
Listener League winner.
Listener League, we love...
That's a champion's meal right there.
Oh, man. I'm going to his place for Christmas.
That's some good eating, Johnny.
Very good eating. And we welcome the Statesman. Welcome to you.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you? I'm looking forward to having a few victories today.
He's pretty cocky, isn't he, Steve?
Well, I'm a bit worried. I think he's actually created a bunch of Twitter identities, because we put out the poll who's going to win the fantasy face-off of today's show, and coming in at a roaring 72% is the Statesman. We didn't get much love between us.
No, I actually had to vote for myself to get on the board.
My God. So you're talking about my underhanded Twitter tactics and...
You're voting for yourself. Yeah.
Jesus.
Otherwise, I'd be on zero.
I'm pretty sure, actually, Mrs. Crockett was the person who voted for me.
Quite possibly. Yeah. Quite possibly. But big news in the fantasy world with Friday just blowing up, really, with the positions starting to be released in both formats of the game. We found out that, as we kind of expected, that we've lost a few players in dual positions, starting with Zach Merritt, Dusty Martin, and Dane Zorko, all losing forward status to become mids only. Lee Montagna is now a defender. Michael Barlow is a mid only. So serious repercussions there, who were looking to maybe snap him up as a forward. But in good news, some players did gain the dual position status, including Jack McRae.
Is that the biggest howler I've ever seen.
Jack McRae kicked 2 goals in 2016, so how he gets mid forward, I have no idea, but that's good. Hey, I'm picking him up. Josh Caddy, mid forward, love it. Took Miller, mid forward. Brad Hill, an interesting one, is a mid forward, so moving over to Perth there. But probably the biggest one, Taylor Adams is now defender mid status. So as Steve's tweeted out over the weekend, just racing up our defender ranking boards. Also, in terms of super coach, we got Bernie Vince as a defensive forward. No.
Defensive mid.
Defensive mid. I've written that down wrong, sorry.
Blake D&Ms for Bernie.
D&Ms. Blake Akers is a mid forward. So quite interesting on that one. Luke Hodge has moved back to the defensive line. Gets you 84, you'd be pretty happy with that with the defender. Rory Lobb has lost his ruck status to become a forward only in Supercoach. And also Jared McVeigh is a defender only. Some other ones, we've got Hamish Hartlett, who is defensive mid. And as we sort of predicted, Mark Blixarves is a mid only in fantasy for the time being. But another person who's lost his defensive status and has become totally irrelevant is Daniel Rich, who is a mid only.
It feels like you want to throw a bit of shade at Daniel Rich, Jono.
If we had time last week, he would have been a burn man.
I actually think, you know, I know we mentioned Taylor Adams as the big addition, I guess you could say, because he's the most consistent. But I actually think Hamish Hartlett's the best out of this bunch because he kind of flies under the radar with his poor average from last year. Playing that defensive role, he's actually been really consistent before that when he's been in the midfield. But I think you're going to get him at a better value than
Taylor Adams.
Than your Taylor Adams, your Jack McRae's. Well, Josh Gaddy might be a great value as well.
Yep.
We know the Statesman's all about him. What do you think about the position changes, mate?
Well, I just think three are a lock to me. Obviously, Taylor Adams in defence. Jack and Josh up in the forward line. They're certainly not going to be around there in round three or four in any draft. So first in, best dress. And I think all three will clearly be in the top six for their position. So they'll be bidding pretty early, I think, and being so unique. We've lost quite a bit in the forward line. So be interesting to see who goes first between Jack and Josh, because I think there's so much upside if he plays in the midfield in Richmond. I think they'll finish about the same, but no doubt after last couple of years' results, you think Jack McRae will get picked up as probably first or second forward.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that in my team.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. He's been very consistent over the last 3 years, but Nick Riewoldt obviously had an absolute banger.
Yeah.
So, but obviously you two blokes are complete ageists, so you'll
pass him up at every opportunity.
Pass him up and give someone else a 10-point edge.
Certainly will.
But a bit of news over the weekend, especially yesterday at the time of recording this. Jarman Impey seems to...
Oh, my God, he's been to the Luke Hodge...
School of driving, vroom, hitting some, and Buddy's Franklin's learned to hit some cars as well. School, so I don't know what the hell. We're still getting details of that, but seems he was on the grog at Angus Monfrey's place and decided to go for a drive.
Well, I mean, Angus Monfrey's has got fantastic hair, so I reckon if I was there, I'd probably have to drink to make myself feel a little bit better as well.
I reckon,
yeah.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can head over to Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors, or head over to Facebook, hit the search button for The Draft Doctors there. Or if you'd like to leave us a review, you can head over to iTunes, hit the 5-star button, leave us a quick review, it takes 5 minutes, or drop us an email where we are thedraftdoctors@gmail.com. But today we are talking fantasy face-off, where we're talking players in... similar draft ranges, similar averages and possessions, and we're going to duke it out with our minds and words.
I have the best words, Jono.
I have no mind.
Well, I'll win.
And we're just going to have a bit of a chat and convince each other as to why, who is the better player and why we're going to draft him. And to start it off, we've got Steve and the Statesman with... Statesman talking Rory Laird and Steve Cade Simpson. Have at it, gentlemen. Steve, fire away.
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting battle. I think Cade Simpson obviously had an absolute banger last year, but I've certainly ranked him ahead of Rory Laird this season. 9 of the last 11 seasons, he's played 22 games. No fewer than 19. I mean, that's just fantastic consistency. Generally has a 22 to 23 disposal average. Last year, bumped that up to 27 disposals per game. That is fantastic for a defender. His marks improved slightly, but this is a guy who kicks the ball. And we know kicks in fantasy, they're just fantastic. He's got a career average of basically 1.8 kicks to every handball. I mean, that's what you want if you're not going to be getting a stack of marks or a stack of tackles as an elite midfielder. You want a really good kick to handball ratio. He's in a bad team. I could see Carlton finishing with the wooden spoon, to be honest. Don't have him picked that way, but I think they're going to want to maintain possession again. We see these bad teams. Brendan Bolton's come from the Hawthorn School of Coaching. A lot of chipping around, marking, keeping control of the ball. Also, Zach Tui is out of this team. There's two blokes in that back line who can use the ball, and one of them is Cade Simpson. His average in Dream Team went up last year, 16 points to 101. In Supercoach went up 14 points to 106. Those are just elite numbers. They're absolutely fantastic. In Supercoach, he's been at 92 or more since 09. A Dream Team is a little bit more up and down. It's been 89, 101, 95, 93, 85. I mean, these are just numbers you can bank on. Brennan Bolt clearly wants the ball in his hands. He's a smart player, very safe disposal. And to speak to Rory Ladd, like, he's fine, but I don't understand where he's with his kick-to-handball ratio being poor. I don't see where he improves his raw numbers to challenge Cade Simpson. He didn't average as much as him last year. I know we always sort of have this idea that younger players can improve, but he averaged 27 disposals and 6.7 marks. That's really good. But I don't understand where that can improve. Like, he's not going to average 10 marks. And if he's not going to improve his kick-to-handball ratio, I don't see that he can catch up to Cade Simpson. I mean, Cade Simpson's as durable as they come, as consistent as they come. I understand last year it was career year. You generally don't get that from guys in their 30s. But that's what happened, and I don't understand why that wouldn't happen again.
Your rebuttal statement.
Yeah, firstly, I won't speak about what Rory Laird was doing 10 years ago, because Rory Laird would have been 13 back then. It's important that we actually look at the where the future is, because that's what we're selecting, not what happened last year or the year before. But we need to look at trends as well. Now, firstly, with Cade Simpson, absolute granted, he's been a fabulous player. Great Eastern Rangers product, 33 years of age next year. The last 2 years, he's averaged 93. Last year, he had a floor of 57 and a ceiling of 135, and a great average at 101. But we must point out, this is only the second time in his career he's averaged over the ton, and only the fourth time in his career that he's averaged over 90. So in 14 seasons, that's right, 14 seasons, he's averaged over 90 only the four times. Now, Rory Laird, on the other hand, is 23, so 10 years his junior. He's only played four seasons of football. He has averaged 71, 61, 88 and 96. Now, I'll go back to 2015 in a minute and explain why Rory Laird's the right pick. Now, first and foremost, his last 2 years, he's averaged 92. That's only one below Cade Simpson. Last year, his floor against Cade Simpson's 57, which, if that's your D1, you'll be very upset if your D1's getting 57. Rory Laird's floor was 73. His ceiling was 136. Yes, that's above Cade Stevens. In his last 32 games, and I'm going to explain why I've picked 32 games, because that coincides with the injury to Matthew Yench. Rory Laird changed his role. Now, over those 32 games, he has tonned up 16 times, and his average is 96. Over the same last 32 games, Cade Simpson, who is 33, has only tonned up 12 times, and his average is 95. So since the role change, Rory Laird has actually averaged more and tonned up more times and has a lower floor than Cade Stevens. One thing we know for sure...
That's Cade Simpson there, Statesman.
Who did I say?
Cade Stevens. This fantasy player. I've never heard of him.
Cade Simpson.
He doesn't even know he's debating. This is a slam dunk.
I will say Cade Stevens is a player I know from somewhere else, which is a bit of a worry. But the bottom line, ever since that role change, he has outscored Cade, whether that's Simpson or Stevens. He's outscored them both. That's the important thing. And the bottom line is, the only reason Cade Stevens had such a spike of 16 points was he was playing the spare in defence. But guess who took over that role late in the year? That was Sam. Now, Sam as far as I'm concerned, is the future of that role in defence for Carlton. Cade Simpson being 33 years of age, will be slowly phased out. Of course, he's still going to have an important role in 2017, but the reality is the travel is going to impact, as it always does in the older players. Cade Simpson will possibly miss a few games, where Rory Laird, at 23 years of age, will be a cornerstone of their defence, part of their structure, and I've got a fair suspicion that he'll take the next step and ton up over the year on an average for 2017. Rory Laird is averaging more, he tons up more, he's got a higher floor and a higher ceiling. He is the man.
Yeah, I don't buy the whole he's older, he'll be rested thing in some players. Like, we're talking Cade Simpson. If they were going to rest him, they could have rested him last year. They don't. Like, he plays 22 games every year. Who got injured last year?
The young fella, McKay.
Rory Laird.
Well, Rory Laird did too.
Rory Laird got injured. I think Cade Simpson gives you absolute consistency. Fine, he had 57. That's going to happen.
Defenders will get that.
Defenders will have bad games. Rory Laird will have bad games. Maybe it's a bit better. That's fine, but give me that average I can bank on. I understand that people like Rory Laird, but for me, I don't think he can improve his raw numbers anymore. He's already a fantastic intercept player. I don't see him becoming... He would need to improve his meters gained, especially for your super coach. That's not his game. His raw numbers are already fantastic, and unless he starts kicking the ball more or starts laying five tackles a game, I don't see him catching up.
Do you see Cade Simpson improving his score?
No, he's not going to improve his score, but I just think...
You just see him maintain.
He's already in front.
Well, 10 years difference.
He's already in front in scoring.
Just. 1 year he's done it.
Rory Laird beat his scoring the previous year and was a shutdown defender for the first 8 rounds.
Give me Cade Simpson. Well, he's averaged over 100 twice. How many times has Rory Laird done it?
None, I don't think.
He's averaged over 90 four times in his career, Cade Simpson, and Rory Laird has averaged 96 last year. That's 1 in 4. So he's already got a higher ratio of getting over that mark.
Cade Simpson's averaged over 105 times.
Ooh, we're going to the book here.
That's fine.
We're going
stats. That's fine. I've got 101, 95, 93, 92 plus last year.
I'm quite happy to to bank my bet and my dollars on the 23-year-old on the rise,
injury prone
Cade Simpson, when he's already outscored him over the last 32 games.
I'll take Cade Stevens. Jono, who do you like?
Nick Stevens, does he still play?
Nick Stevens in a lot of trouble.
See, I'm going to go with the states on this one,
confirm,
purely on the ageist, being an ageist.
On Dream Team, just to confirm, he's only gone over the ton twice, 101.3 in 2010 and 101.1 in 2016.
Yeah, that's right. I said he's gone over 95 times, averaged over 95 times.
Oh, happy with that. Yes, you are correct. Yeah.
John, give me a ruling.
Sorry?
No, you're going to go for the young guy.
I'm going for young guy Ledge.
Well,
you know I'm an ageist.
I'll take the loss. That's fine, because Jono's a terrible judge of everything, especially what goes on your nachos. So I'll introduce the next battle, if you will. And I'm really interested to hear this one. And it's Statesman representing Dyson Heppel.
Boo, drug cheat.
Which I can't believe he didn't go for Dyson Heppel, because he's your boy.
I don't like drug cheats. I don't support them.
Versus Jono with Dane Beams. I'll let Statesman kick it off, since he's the winner of the last one.
Well, I can't use the ages claim here. One's 25, one's 27. So they both should be in the prime of their career. And there's no doubt, and I'll concede straight away, if we're talking about ultimate ceiling, then Dane Beams has put that score on the board. 116 he averaged, that was 5 years ago, but he's shown that he's a magnificent player when everything is going his way. Unfortunately, that hasn't been the case in recent times. So if we go past the over the last five years, and Dyson's actually played five seasons of footy, 83, 85, 95, 106 and 101, and obviously missed 2016. Over the past 5 years, Dane Beams, 116, 101, 107, 103 and 86. This is all obviously Dream Team. The fewest games that Dyson Heppel has played was 2013 with a total of 19 games. Dane Beams, on the other hand, has never played a full season, and that includes seasons of 7 and 2 games, which is a real concern. The last two seasons, Dyson Heppel, 43 games at 104 average. Dane Beams, 18 games at 101 average. But if we include the banned year, Dyson Heppel played 22 games over the past 2 years with an average of 101.6. But Dane Beams, who had the ability to play two seasons, still played less games of only 18, 101.1. In my honest opinion, Dyson Heppel is low risk, Dane Beams is high risk, and potential to give you the similar reward. It's an easy decision. It's Dyson Heppel.
I think I disagree on that one there, Statesman. Yes, his ceiling is much higher than Dyson Heppel's, and he's proven that in... by going his best is 122 in Supercoach, for those who are wondering, back in 2012. Dyson Heppel, he's capped. He's not going to go any higher than your 104, 105 average, in my opinion, over his career. Whereas we've seen it from Dane, 116, 122. He can just knock scores out of the park, take control, especially he's going to be fit and firing this year. I'm taking that to the bank. He'll be fit and firing. He's going to go back to his best, where he was taking marks, kicking goals. Well, actually, he kicked 23 goals in his first year, or his last year at Collingwood. One thing I'll give to you, Statesman, Dyson Heppel is better in hitouts than my man Dane Beams.
That's a tiebreaker, people.
Dane Beams has only ever had one hitout in his entire career to Dyson's 91. Dyson doesn't kick as many goals as Dane, mainly because Dyson has played in the back line where that has hampered his scores. But he, Dane Beams, yeah, he's a contested player than Heppel. He's ranked 10th in 2015 with that. He was ranked 9th in contested possessions per game in 2013. His kicks averages about... 12.5, 13 per game. His possessions always around the 25 to 30 plus possessions per game. Dyson's not there yet. You said he is risky, but he's sorted himself out. He's back to his best.
You can't say he's back to his best when he's never played a full season. So his
2012.
Best is his best to get 14 games. Congratulations, Dane. I'm glad I spent a round one pick on you.
Oh, I won't be using a round one pick on him, and I don't think you would with Dyson Heppel, but...
But Dane Beams would have gone in a round one pick previously, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
He's basing it all on reputation, not delivering anything. And I agree, neither of these would go round one in next year's draft, but the reality is... in 90% of competitions, Dyson Heppel is going to get picked up before Dane Beams because he's toxic.
Depends on how your team's sitting. I'd risk Dane Beams ahead of Heppel.
I'm not convinced, Jono.
No?
I'm not convinced.
You're a Beams fan.
You've laid out a flimsy argument. Look, obviously I did the sheets and I put these two together because I feel like Beams has a higher ceiling.
He does.
Dyson Heppel's very safe. Dyson Heppel's very safe. Whereas Dane Beams, the last thing you'd call him, is safe. Now, Jono, you could have won this one, but your rambling, incoherent argument...
Just like Dane Beams.
Has lost it for you, unfortunately. I'm Statesman. Look, this is killing me to give another win to the Statesman. I would have given you this one.
But, the people are right.
It's very disappointing.
It is. But our next battle is you and I, Steve.
You can call it that.
I can see this myself clearly winning this one.
I'm coming up against you, Joe.
Yeah.
I got Sean Burgoyne.
That's all right, because my run sheet here says differently. It says I've got Burgoyne.
Luckily, sorry, that's my bad.
Yep. No. Yep. Steve, you got Sean Burgoyne. I've got Zach Williams.
Yeah, and GWS. I put this on the sheet because I knew you ageists choose Zach Williams, and I'll choose Sean Burgoyne, but this is going to be a slam dunk for me, buddy.
How so, Steve?
How so? Last 3 years, 22 games.
Zach Williams has only played four, 5 years.
Well, so Sean Burgoyne's obviously a lot more consistent. Okay, look, the averages are in the same basket.
They are.
Sean Burgoyne, 86, Dream Team, 94, Supercoach. Zach Williams, 83 and 88.
88 and 82.
Oh,
you rounded up.
I rounded it up because it was pretty close. So I gave you a little bit of a leg up because I think you need all the help you can get. They're similar. They're very similar in their averages. Sean Burgoyne, double the tackles. And I love the tackles. Now,
the How many did Burgoyne have this year?
Six a game. Okay. Six a game. Went over 10 five times.
Okay.
So similar numbers, but this is the reason why I believe, and you guys will go, oh, the young guy's going to improve and blah, 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 blah. Sean Burgoyne's going to play in the midfield.
And how long would his body hold up?
Well, it plays 22 games, so.
Yeah, when he was sitting there fluffing around in the defence.
When they needed a match winner, who do they turn to?
Burgoyne, because he could only last about Burgoyne, 5 minutes in that midfield.
Because he goes up forward. They need a good ball user going inside forward. When they need a spark, he's a match winner. He's a good player. He's one of my favourite players of all time. I used to love him at Port Adelaide. But anyway, look, Zach Williams is a good player, but he still gets negating roles. Now, with Shaw, Haynes, Nathan Wilson, all these guys can't score well. We've seen that. And he's a good player.
Well, Zach Williams actually overtook Nathan Wilson's spot.
I understand that. Yeah. But that doesn't mean he still didn't get negating roles, even towards the end of the season. How's this for the end of the season? Over their last 10 matches, which is a pretty good indicator of what's going to happen next year. We'll take their last 10 games. So, and that includes both of their finals, because they both played two finals.
Yep.
Sean Burgoyne averaged, after round 16, 101 Dream Team and 111 Supercoach. What was old mate Zach Williams' average over that time? 71 Dream Team, 75 Supercoach. So that's a nice little 30-point bump.
So that just shows Hawthorn were in a lot of trouble and needed an old man to get him out of trouble. Whereas he'd normally be sitting in defence.
Can I talk? Is it my turn?
No. I thought we were going back and forth.
Are we doing that?
If you want.
He had 5 games with 10-plus tackles. Zach Williams can't offer you that. 12 goals last year. So he's going to play forward. He's going to play midfield. He's going to play where they need him. Because their team has no good ball users anymore.
No, that's
right. Aside from probably Cyril. So they need a good ball user going inside forward 50. It looks like Roughhead might get up. Well, it looks like he might come back this year at some point. But look, they're going to be competitive. People are writing Hawthorn off. I don't believe it. He's the best ball user in that team without a question. They need his attack if they're going to win games of football.
Jagger O'Meara, Tom Mitchell.
So neither of them are good ball users.
But they won't need... Oh, yes.
What, they're just going to hack it up?
Yeah, they probably will. They probably will.
And rely on the contested marking prowess of Luke Bruce.
Yeah. But no. He's old. He's going to slow down. They've always used Burgoyne as that role player, as you said. He's going to stick in his defence or he's going to stick forward. They're not going to put him in the guts anymore. They've got all these young kids coming through that they need to get experience in. So, again, as you said, those averages were 100. That was when Hawthorn were in trouble and that he's their go-to guy. There's no way he's going to be doing that for 22-plus rounds of an AFL season. He'll get injured. He'll get rested, which will affect his time on ground and his scoring.
He'll get injured. He'll get rested.
Yes.
What a crock.
He will.
Why?
How old is he, like 50?
Well, he's pretty old.
Yeah.
But he still beats Zach Williams. Zach Williams He gets
Zach
roles.
Williams has only played five. This is his first full year of football since joining the team in 2013. This year he almost tripled his possessions per game. Marks went up double. Goals, he's only kicked four goals for the year, 4-4, so he's getting up there. But he's used for that rebounding defence with his great speed and kicking. Double his tackles. Doubled his tackles.
You know the only game Zach Williams scored well? One, they pushed him forward. Two, they put him in the midfield. Three, Heath Shaw was tagged. Those are the only times he scores well.
Nah. Fifth year, breakout year. He's on the improve in an improving team that two kicks out of a grand final. Hawthorn on the way down. He's old. It's an old team, a slowed team.
He's an inconsistent. He's the bunt. He's the Alan Christensen.
Oh, that's harsh.
Goddamn right, that's harsh. Give me Sean Burgoyne. He's silk. He's going to take the Hawks back into the top eight.
Well, they're still wearing the eight. Maybe the top four, you mean?
And he could go 95 dream team.
Well, I can see Zach Williams improving that to next year. It's only
95 dream team. How? He doesn't tackle. He's going to need 10 marks.
He doubled his tackles from the year before.
To three. That's not his game.
That's right. You can double again. That's fine. We've seen it.
Had five games where he went 10 plus.
That's five, yeah. Because they were in trouble. And they put him in the midfield, and that's where he gets his points. Other than that, he sits...
Oh, okay. So when he plays midfield, he's not going to score points this year?
No, because he won't be playing midfield.
Oh, my God. You're smoking crack, buddy. Statesman, give me a verdict. I know you're on Zach Williams' side, so it probably hurts you to side with me on this one, but...
My drama is you're both making really good points, but you are right, Steve, right at the beginning of the conversation, I'm leaning one way. But other than bullying your point across that he's going to play in the midfield, guaranteeing the spots where I think what Hawthorn's strategy has been right throughout the off season was to make a dynamic change to their midfield group. And I think that includes your Hodge, your Burgoynes. So I think it's the new young faces in there, not the old. Although at times I think you might see Burgoyne go in there for a spell, but I think they did that at the end of the year because they had already highlighted to themselves that they needed to change the midfield. But they've done that in the off season. It's not the future for their midfield for Sean Burgoyne to be there. So I disagree with your point there. So therefore, I have to give the win to Jono.
Huzzah.
You're on crack. You're on crack.
Can I also make this point that I don't reckon you won the argument, Jono. I reckon Steve just went gung-ho on one point rather than backing up reasons just because they were failing at the end of the year that he's the answer to the midfield the following year. Well, so you didn't win it, Jono.
Default. Default.
But if GWS were winning, if GWS were winning at the end of the year, why did Zach Williams score so badly? Why was his average so poor? Why was he knocking out 40s?
Role change.
I think Zach Williams is going to be the 75 to 85 scorer as a defender. I'm just not convinced with Burgoyne's history. And let's talk about Dream Team. Four of the past 6 years have been 71, 72, 78, 74. Had a really good spike again this year.
Is this by a judge or a contestant? This is killing me.
So his scoring history just unfortunately really isn't there since he's sort of become a bits player. And it really spiked at the end of this year. It was going to be another 70s result until they realised they were really hurting in the guts. And that's why I think they've had a real major change of strategy at the end of 2016. The future isn't Sean Burgoyne, sorry.
No, the future isn't. Okay, Stevens. The future isn't Sean
Moving Burgoyne. On to the next battle.
Oh, God, you blokes are absolutely... Jackass.
Baxter, Statesman v. Steve.
You're just going to gang up on me again here.
With Statesman arguing for Devin Smith and Steve for Stevie Motlop. Fire away, Steve.
I have to lead it off again. Jesus Christ. All right. Devin Smith versus Steve Motlop. Well, Devin Smith, his name's Lunch Meat for starters. only played the 12 games last year. This is Stevie Motlop's fantastic 22. Everyone says how bad Steve Motlop's year was, but he still averaged more than Devin Smith. Averaged 82, Dream Team 84, Supercoach down from the year before, 89 and 88. Devin Smith was 80 and 81. And he has got a much higher average in both forms of 94 and 92, which was a couple of years ago. People were very critical of Motlop's year. Average more disposals, more marks, and how's this, Jono? More goals than Devin Smith. Devin Smith doesn't traditionally actually have a really high goal scoring average, believe it or not. Smith, much better tackler. Averaged at least 4 tackles a year. But this is my thing. Caddy's gone from Geelong. And that's what Steve Motlop does. He's a goal-kicking midfielder. Brett Deledio has come in to GWS, who is a goal-kicking, well, let's say half forward, much like Devin Smith. Devin Smith's game is pushing up onto the wing and running back and kicking goals, which he does inconsistently. Now, you can write the story that Nakia Cockatoo stepped up for Geelong, or Guthrie becomes a mid. I don't see it. Story of Tui in the mids. I don't see it. There's a narrative here as well. Contract year. We were all having a big laugh last year about old Caprichosa Motlop coming in looking like the Michelin man. Stevie Motlop's come back looking like the Hulk this year. He's fit. He knows this is his big contract. If he's ever going to get one, this is the year. He's in a fantastic team, much like Devin Smith, but he doesn't have to share things with anyone. You're talking about guys like who are around him, like your Darcy Langs, your Corey Gregsons. Stevie Motlop he's got the ceiling. We've seen it. He's a match winner. I think he can improve his floor. Devin Smith, look, he's been injured. We know he's got a reasonable ceiling, but he just doesn't do it enough. Now he's faced with more competition. There's Brett Deledio. There's Stevie J. There's All-Australian Toby Green in that team. Devin Smith relies on his tackles and goals to get his scores. Fine, the tackles might be consistent because he generally averages 4. Well, he has averaged 4 every year he's been in the competition. I don't see the goals being consistent. I know GWS are going to win a lot of games, but I think Stevie Motlop is one of the main avenues to kicking goals at Geelong. I've absolutely got him ahead of Devin Smith. Devin Smith is just too inconsistent, too injury prone for me I know Stevie Motlop's the same, but I'm just... This is a gut pick. Statesman's laughing. He's going to choose an injury prone player when he's argued for guys who haven't played full seasons before. Go
listen, listen to
go
the
on.
Smugness.
I know. He's all saladed up. I can't argue against the bloke who's all saladed up.
Oh, 5 years of football, Devin Smith's had. He's had one injury. Injury prone player. One injury in 5 years. Now, let's talk about this year. He started the season. We all knew he was underdone. And all he did was redo his injury. He was averaging around the 60 mark after 5 rounds. He had quite a fair bit of time off. He come back in round 15 or 16, I think it was. From there on to the end of the season, he averaged over 90. Now, that's an interesting mark, 90, because Devin Smith, in only 5 years of football, has actually averaged over 90, something that Stephen Motlop has never done in his life. Now, if we want to talk about injury prone, one's played 7 years of football, the other one's only played 5. Now, Motlop, 7 years, has totaled 104 games, and his dream team average is 74.9. Devin Smith, 91 games at 80.6. average. So the man, as in Devin Smith, or lunch meat if you wish to call him, has actually got well and truly a much higher average already, even though he's still young in his career. If we talk about dream team tons, Devin Smith 26, Steve Motlop, even though he's had more games, only 21 tons in the last 3 years, which includes apparently an injury ravage time. 53 games to Devin Smith at an average of 87.8. Motlop, 57 games, so only four more games at an average of 84.9. So Devin Smith is on the rise on a team that's just about to start winning premierships year after year. He's a man that has proven already that he can turn up 26 in 91 games. He is a great F2 with the potential of scoring an F1 level. And Stephen Motlop, that beautiful floor that he has, and as we can see, less of a ceiling than Devin Smith, is a scary F3 at best.
I'm taking the bloke who's sponsored by a pizza shop, who doesn't even feel the need to come back. How can you say he's not injury prone? He's missed significant amount of time in the last 2 years. I always try to build a player's score. Like, how are they actually going to... I know we can sit here and go, oh, they're going to score 95. How do they build it? When Devin Smith had his best year, there was no one there. Like, there's Jeremy Cameron, who's like the most overrated player in the league. Now there's all this competition for goals, all this competition for time, all this competition for possessions. I don't understand how the ceiling's there. At Geelong, it's gone. It's gone. Like, the team's changed. GWS has changed. It's not the same team as it was when he had this 94-92 team. Geelong, fine, that's changed as well. Give me the guy who's about to... Who really needs this season, whereas a guy who needs to play well for his team to win a premiership. I don't think...
You're right. Stephen Motlop plays under pressure really well.
What pressure? He's not arguing against you two cheats. This is pressure.
I'm going to make a decision here.
Yeah, I know which way.
I'm actually going to go with Steve.
Yay!
Injury affected players, once if they're starting off young with injuries.
He's going to crack it now.
I know he's going to crack it.
He's had one injury.
I've never liked Devin Smith. Game?
So he's
never liked him.
20, 18, 21, 20, 12.
So he's never played a full season.
And let's go through Stephen Motlop. 1, 4, 21, 21, 15, 20, 22.
22.
Played one full season.
22.
One.
Well, he's just coming into his prime. Look at him.
One.
He's lost it. He's cracked.
I'm going to go with old Capricciosa there.
We're going salads versus nachos on their average and overall score for next year.
All right.
That's all right. We'll come back to that one in September next year.
Well, that's all right. We'll come back to Sean Burgoyne laying the pipe to bloody everyone. All right. Well, look, since we're going to move on, got a bit heated there. Statesman's obviously feeling the pinch. This is a really interesting one because, he hates old players and he's going to say, oh, well, he's not that old.
No.
We've got Jono representing his boy, Luke Dalhouse.
Yeah.
And the Statesman representing the number one forward of all time, potentially, in Brett Deledio. So I'm really interested to hear this one. This is going to be a good one. I'm really interested. Why don't you kick it off, Jono? Let the Statesman collect his thoughts.
All right. It's old versus new. Deledio, he's washed up. But Luke Dalhouse, he had an injury-affected year this year. First time he's missed a game in a long, long time. Only played the 17 home and away seasons, which dropped his average from 95 Supercoach to 92 Dream Team, whereas last year he had a 104 Supercoach and 97 Dream Team. Luke Dalhouse is finally balanced as a perfect mid-forward. He gets plenty of midfield time, but still spends enough time forward to grab his snags. This guy loves a tackle. From the last 3 years, he's gone 87, increased to 120, and obviously dropped back again in this year to 113, but quite easily would have smashed that. Loves the tackle. Whereas Brett Deledio, the last 2 years, he's laid 39 and 56 tackles. Not great. Not great at all. We know with Luke Dalhouse, he's a premiership player now. The Dogs are only going to get better with such a young team around him. There's many unknowns about Brett Delidio moving from Richmond to the GWS. They say he's going to play as a half forward. But when you're in the team with Stevie J, Toby Green, all Australian,
Devin Smith
is going to average 150.
Oh, allegedly. And you've got Patton and Cameron there, as well as a raft of excellent midfielders in Coniglio, Shiel, and Griffin and the likes. I can't see where these points, like, no doubt Delidio's been a fantasy beast in both formats over the years, but Father Time's catching up to him. He hasn't played a full season in a couple of years. Achilles and calf injuries, very, very dodgy. He's been the best forward going around, but Luke Dalhouse is going to take that mantle off him starting now.
Yes, I don't know about taking any mantle. Dalhouse is a magnificent little player, goes hard. He's a great player to watch, but let's face facts, he's always going to be that sort of bottom end of the top 10 scales as when it comes to forwards and points scored. He will probably never average over 100. His highest is 97 in Dream Team. He's had two seasons over 90 at the age of 25. It's not incredible. Over the past 5 years, he's had 99 games at an average of 84.4. Not that I dislike him, and I would never be upset that he was in my team, but if you really want to win your league, then you should be grabbing someone that can really hit a ceiling, and Brett Delidio's that type of man. Absolutely, granted, last two seasons have not been good. I will point out, when we're talking about the ageist theory, this man turns 30 in 2017, not 33, 34 or 35. It's actually 30 years of age. Yes, the Achilles and the calves a bit of an issue. He was actually effectively put to bed last year because they were out of finals calculations, so there was no point taking risk. Whether they were planning to trade him at that stage and they wanted to make sure he was truly ripe for that and a fitness test, I don't know. The difference here is he's had nine seasons averaging over 90. So when you've got, and yes, played five more years, but one's had two seasons over 90, the other one nine, and his highest is 110. And yes, that was a standout, but the reality is he has that explosive scoring that's quite capable. The difference of Delidio versus Dalhouse is Dalhouse just played in the best team of the year. Yes, they finished seventh on the ladder, but between third place and seventh was very, very close. He averaged 97. Delidio has never been in a top two, three or four club. So it's going to be interesting to see what he can do. And I think it's only potential because there's so many other players they have to mind. So he has the potential, and I think they want the ball in his hands. He has the potential to actually have a career high, and that's why I'm very high on him. At the end of the day, there is a risk. It's a medium to high risk for Delidio with a potential very high return. Dalhouse, because of the way he plays, he's at a risk of getting collision injuries that includes concussions. He's a low to mid risk with a medium return. And when we're talking about leagues and draft options, I go with the big return option, especially when it's potentially a very big option.
Well, just a quick rebuttal there. The first 2 years of Luke Dalhouse's career were played as a lockdown forward. So obviously the scoring wasn't there, but Dalhouse can hit the ceilings too, where he's top scorer of 132 Dream Team and 154 Supercoach this year. So obviously that ceiling is there for Luke Dalhouse. Steve, what is your ruling, mate?
Look, I'm adjudicating on the argument, not on which player I prefer, unlike you two cheats.
True. Cheats. Sorry, Devin Smith should have won. On the
argument. Well, Sean Burgoyne should have won. Look, I would personally, I would draft Dalhouse first. But I think the argument's correct in that the boom bust is there for Deledio. Dalhouse is an injury risk as well. That point is well made. So to say one's an injury risk and one's not...
Well, Statesman said one's a higher injury risk than the other.
Yeah, look, he is. But, I mean, I think they both carry significant risks. Mm. You know, soft tissue is a little bit different to
bone
to impact knee. Injuries. Soft tissues have a history, whereas impact injuries, you kind of, you know, they're less predictable.
Mm.
But it's still there. But yeah, unfortunately, I'll give the argument to Statesman.
Boo. If I could lift this table up, I will.
Yeah, well.
Actually, I will say that's very summed up, because I think if you got either one when they were both hanging there, I don't think you'd be upset with your decision.
No, and that's right. And like when these are decisions I sent the list out to both of you guys. It was about 30 to 40,
yeah.
20 or 30 choices of guys I felt were similarly tiered. And I don't know, you guys can look, it felt like there was always in a lot of them there was a player I preferred. Some of them were pretty line ball, and I mean a lot of them we've seen today.
Mm.
But I feel like a lot of them are similarly tiered. Yes, you might grab one before the other, but if they're in the same tier and one got drafted before you, you know, you'd still pick up the other one and not be too upset.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And that's what it's all about. It comes down to personal preference.
Would you agree, Statesman? They're all pretty similarly tiered. You might...
Yeah, absolutely.
Do that. Well, anyway, we're going to get into our...
I debated over that one for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I thought... Probably the biggest one of the day, I would have thought.
I really was interested in the Beam Tepper one.
No, this one was my favourite one.
But anyway, let's get into the last one, Jono, we're going to do today.
Yeah.
It's already been almost an hour. Long show, yeah.
Last one of the day is I have Jack Stephen from St Kilda against Steve, who has the new Hawk, Tom Mitchell. Steve, fire away, son.
Yeah, look, I think this is really interesting... debate as well. Both these guys averaged 28 disposals last year, but Tom Mitchell averaged more marks and more tackles. They both played 22 games. That's fantastic. Tom Mitchell averaged 105 Dream Team, 103 Supercoach, versus Jack Stevens, 104 Supercoach, 102 Dream Team. Have I got that the right way?
104, 103.
Yeah. Look, this is the thing why I think Tom Mitchell is my choice over Jack Stephen. Look, they've both got particularly high ceilings.
Correct.
But I think Jack Stephen has got a much, much, much lower floor. Tom Mitchell played a lot of roles last year that really weren't fantasy friendly, and he still came out and absolutely killed it even more the year before. Now he's the top dog at Hawthorn, as far as I'm concerned. He's the top clearance player.
That scares the hell out of me.
And we see players who win 15% of their team clearances... A Jets, unless your name is Ben Cunnington.
Or Patrick Cripps.
No, he smashed it last year. But it's good for fantasy scores. If you can average more than 15% of your team's clearances, you're generally an absolute Jet, and your baseline is 100. That's just the general rule. In 2015, so the season before, playing more midfield, you take away his two sub games, that average is 115 Dream Team people. This guy is an absolute ball magnet. He's a tackling machine. Jack Stephen is way too susceptible to the tag. Tagged throughout the fantasy finals last year. I was desperately, in our league of record, Jono, I had Jack Stephen, and you would know throughout the year I was desperately trying to unload Jack Stephen before the fantasy finals. Man, his average over those 4 weeks, 78 Dream Team, 72 Supercoach. Man, when he gets a tag, he is shut down. Like I said, they both have a high ceiling. But this to me, because of the roles he was playing, which weren't particularly fantasy friendly, and he still managed to put out really good numbers, this is Tom Mitchell's baseline. I don't think you can, like, tagging clearance players, look, that's the risk, okay? Mm. Maybe he struggles under the tag. I personally think he'll excel because he doesn't, we've seen him in negative roles and succeed before. So to me, the tag doesn't scare me. He has room to improve. Stephen, to me, this is what he is. He's got the big boom, but the very low ceiling, the very low floor as well. Maybe he's been the number one Dream Team player before. That has happened. That's in his range of outcomes. I don't feel it's particularly likely. I feel like maybe some of his contested possessions go down with the arrival of Jack Steele. They can use
Kobe Stephens.
They can use Jack Stephen on the spread more, use his burst running.
Yep.
Tom Mitchell just has room to improve his tackle count as well. Look at his grand final. 13 tackles, 26 disposals, 2 goals in the grand final. I mean, that is unbelievable. He's just an absolute jet, and the volume is unparalleled. I've got big raps on Tom Mitchell.
You say about Tom Mitchell that he played the negative roles but still played well, but that's when he was, the fourth, fifth midfielder?
But he wasn't the midfielder.
At Sydney? But he's tagging.
But he was playing negative forward role.
Well, negative forward. He's still getting but that's over the whole season, so he wasn't always... He was that role player, as you said, right?
Or he had roles.
Yes, he had roles. But generally, they were a shutdown role.
Yeah.
Well, we saw that with Coniglia this year. He had a shutdown role, inverted commas, and still scored well. But with Tom Mitchell being, as I said, the third, fourth, or fifth midfielder, whatever you want to call it, I don't see him being able to handle that pressure as being the number one guy. Yeah, he gets all the clearance of that, but we haven't seen him under the pressure that Jack Stephen has carried throughout his fantasy career. I mean, you said Tom Mitchell was number one scorer, was it 2015?
No. I said if you took away his sub effect. Oh, he would have averaged 115 Dream Team.
Yeah.
No, I thought two games.
No, I thought you said he was the number one ranked player.
No, Jack Stephen was the number one scorer, I think it was 4 seasons ago in Dream Team.
Third.
You don't even know.
Third per game he was.
He was the number one by points, okay. Total points.
But he was also...
I'm helping you out here.
I know. He was 7th in 2015 for total AFL fantasy points here, Jack Stephen. His tackle countdown was down this year, but that's different roles, and as the tag was... apply to him, but he's got...
Oh, so he didn't handle the tag.
No, I'll concede that. But the Saints have brought in bodies to help him now. You got Kobe Stephens, who's a big body. You got Jack Steele, big body. He's going to be all right. David Armitage, he's gone. Jack Stephens still the number one midfield on that team. He's going to have the protection that he needs to go back to being the number one scorer. I mean, he's had this year he had 615 disposals. Last year was just under 600 disposals. He had that injuries in 2014, which affected him. But the year before that, again, almost another 600 disposals. He gets the pill. He kicks about 15, 20 goals a year. Loves the tackle. The coach, his game plan is highly contested, like a lot of teams are this year. He'll run all day for you. He'll get protected. And interesting fact, we share the same birthday, so that's why he's...
So he's an automatic loser.
Well, what am I? I am 7 years older than him.
Look, Tom Mitchell, he was a midfielder the year before, smashed it, averaged more than Jack Stephen in negative roles. I think it's clear cut.
New club,
You talk about protection. One club's got Liam Shields, Isaac Smith, Sean Burgoyne running through
that midfield. He would not be running through that midfield.
Luke Hodge laying people out.
In defence, that's right.
Well, he'll go through there and lay people out. Jagger O'Meara getting the attention if he plays.
What, on the bench or in the stand?
I said if he plays? He won't. Open your ear holes.
What?
Anyway, look, this is going to disintegrate into just
mayhem.
Mush. Statesman, give us a ruling, buddy.
Yeah, look, to be quite blunt, I think you both covered Jack Stephen's strengths and weaknesses very well. It was interesting, Jono, that you raised his deficiencies when in getting tagged as well, and you're only out when you're mentioning that is he'll get more protection. I think, Steve, you highlighted Titch's potential. Being at a new club, I don't think either of you raised his deficiency, which is one John Longmire, but that problem is now solved. And I think, Steve, you really highlighted the reasons why I think Tom Mitchell will probably potentially be in the top three fantasy scorers for 2017. So a win to Steve.
Big call, top three.
I just see three dots on your head, Predator style. Wrap it up, buddy.
All right. That wraps up the show. And I'm leaving the country because of this. I'm humiliated.
I can't believe you both dissed Sean Burgoyne.
If you'd like to follow us on social media and give us your thoughts on some of the players we spoke about today, you can do that by heading over to Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors, or head over to Facebook, search The Draft Doctors there, or send us an email as to how you thought the debates went to thedraftdoctors@gmail.com. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.